Good morning, or maybe it's good afternoon, or good evening. Welcome! Bienvenidos! Buenos dias, buenas tardes, buenas noches. I'm not sure when you're listening, or watching and listening to this. But we, all of us, at Southwestern College, are very, very glad that you are here with us and taking Business 123 Introduction to Investments. My name is Frank Baiano. You have to wave your hands around in the air. It's Italian. But you can call me Frank, or as the students down at San Isidro call me Paco, Paquito. And I am your instructor for this class. And I believe that I am incredibly privileged and honored and certainly very happy to be the instructor for this class. This is my favorite class to teach. Why? Because I live this stuff. This and my financial planning and money management class also. And the first thing I want to tell you about this class is that you need no prior investment experience. I've written it down in the pre-semester and semester announcements, first week of announcements, if you've read those already. It is in the syllabus. We start from the very beginning. Don't worry if you don't know anything about investments, because you're starting from the very beginning. All right? Okay, good. I'm gonna say it again. I'm gonna say it often, by the way. Because it cannot be stressed enough. People come to this class with preconceived notions. Some are terrified, some feel very comfortable, maybe they understand, maybe they don't, and the key is to relax and just start from the very beginning. Okay, great. Now, a quick note about these presentations. They are in MP3 file format, so you can put them on an MP3 player, you can burn them to a CD, listen to them while you're commuting or walking the dog or whatever. And then, of course, you could be watching this on your browser, because the files are in what's called Flash format. Now, Apple mobile devices do not support Flash, so we also put these on iTunes. So if you search for Business 123, no dash, you will find these on iTunes also. You ready? Okay. Let's get started. Slide number 2, a perspective. It is a gloomy moment in history. Never has the future seemed so dark and incalculable. The United States is beset with racial, industrial, and commercial chaos, drifting we know not where. Of our troubles, no one can see the end. Did you see this last night on Skunk News? Weasel News. Fox News, yeah! Last Tuesday, when they were talking about the end of the world and... No. When you ask people when this was written, they'll often say 1930s Depression, 1940s World War II. Not quite. It was actually 1847. Yeah, when the country was about ready to tear itself apart for the Civil War. Did they have problems back in the 1840s? Yes. Serious problems. Do we have problems? Yes. We will always have problems. But so far, those of us who have taken a long-term view and been optimistic have actually done pretty well. Is that a guarantee for the future? No, but I'm certainly not going to bet against the United States. I don't know about you. It turns out that optimistic people also are happier. At least that's what the sociologists tell us. Supposedly they live longer. The pessimists just say, hey, they're not as well informed. They're not being realistic. Well, no, they are. The truth is that things have gotten better. Over the long sweep of the history of the United States, things have gotten much better. And those who have invested in companies and other types of investments have done very, very well, as we shall see. But again, is it a guarantee for the future? No. So, let's get started on slide number 3, which is our title slide for this section. Now, it's really chapter 1, but what I've done, or what I've tried to do here, is to create what I believe should be the contents of the first chapter of an Introduction to Investments textbook. In other words, if I were writing the book. Our book, which we discuss in the syllabus, is actually quite good, don't get me wrong, but they just concentrate on risk versus return in chapter 1, which is great. We're going to do a lot of that because that's very important. But they save the overview for chapter 3. I think that's a little unfortunate. And in chapter 3, they go into far too much detail. Far too much detail. So I want you to read chapter 1. Certainly, there's a couple of books in the library on reserve. You can get the 4th, 5th, 6th edition. I already talked about that in the syllabus for very, very little money if you shop around. But when or if you read chapter 3, I want you to just skim over it. Don't get bogged down in all the details, especially about the derivatives. Oh my goodness, why did they do that in chapter 3? I don't know. But if we're going to sum up this section, what we want to do is steal from Mr. J. Kenfield Morley, because he said it so well many, many years ago. Now, I would change the word interest to reward, because investment returns come in many different forms, not just interest. But let's read this quote at the bottom of the slide. In investing money, the amount of interest you want should depend upon whether you want to eat well or sleep well. Yeah, he got it all figured out. Do you want to have a great reward? Well, you're going to get great risk. If you want little risk, you're not going to get a whole lot of more reward. So do you want to eat well or do you want to sleep well? Because unfortunately, when it comes to investing, you can't do both. However, as long as you take a long-term perspective, then the sleeping well problem shouldn't be a major issue because you don't care that it falls down next week or next year or next month or whatever. If you take a long-term viewpoint, we see that things have gotten better and should continue to get better. And if it all falls down, it doesn't matter where we put our money anyway. So remember this quote, dear students. The amount of investment reward, instead of just interest, as we'll see, there's more than just interest, should depend on whether you want to eat well, meaning you're going to get great risk, or sleep well, meaning you're going to get a little risk, but not a whole lot of reward. Slide number 4. As we said in the syllabus and as we said on the announcement, we start from the very beginning with the question, what is an investment? How's that? So many times, especially in the face-to-face class, you will see students with their eyes wide open because they're frightened to death because they watched these shows on the television that where the gentlemen and ladies were barking out jargon terms that they didn't understand and thought they understood, but they weren't quite sure. So I want you to forget all that. If you're one of those people who is really worried about thinking that this is not for me, I can't possibly do this, realize that that's absolutely horse feathers. It's not true. Warren Buffett likes to say, investing is simple, but it ain't easy. And what does he mean by that? Well, there's two aspects of investing. There's an intellectual part that we're going to learn in this class, And then there's an emotional part, which I'm going to do my best to help you with. But folks, you have to experience it. And you think you might be ready for it, but when you see your $10,000 become $6,000, you just don't know how you're going to react. And hopefully you will be forewarned. You'll be ready for that 30%, 20%, 40% drop, and realize that if the world doesn't end, it's going to bounce back. It's going to come back. We will persevere. And if it does, oh well, it didn't matter where you put your money. We'll discuss gold way at the end, folks. So let's take a look at slide number 4. An investment is any vehicle into which resources can be placed with the expectation that it will generate positive income or that its value will be preserved or increased or both. So in other words, we're looking for income or growth or both, right? And those are the things we get from investments. So I want you to write down this definition, because when you see an investment or something that claims to be an investment, you need to take a look at it through the lens of this definition and see if it really does satisfy that definition. Does it generate income? Does it grow? Does it at least preserve its value? And this is Benjamin Graham. Now, Benjamin Graham was Warren Buffett's teacher, and we'll discuss books to read later on. He wrote the definitive book on investing called The Intelligent Investor. And eventually, not the first book you want to read, but eventually you're going to want to read this. And he says it very succinctly. An investment operation is one which, upon thorough analysis, promises safety of principal and a satisfactory return. Operations not meeting these requirements are speculative. And so, we're going to differentiate between an investment and a speculation. And what am I talking about? Well, in the investment world, we don't use the word gambling. No. We use the word speculative. It's a euphemism. Meaning, when you hear the word speculative, this is a speculative vehicle. You hang on to your wallet, your purse, and run for the hills. Okay? Yes. Let's take a look at the investment returns, the investment rewards that we discussed actually in the previous slide, because Mr. Morley Kenfield said that he wanted to discuss interest. But there's more than just interest. There's also dividends. Interest comes from short-term savings accounts and money markets and bonds. Dividends come from stocks. And we're going to learn all this, folks. Don't worry. You don't have to write it down. We're going to go through it over and over again. Rent comes from real estate. And we also call these cash flows, or the cash flows. That's another name for it. And then the other returns are when the value is increased or decreased. And the decrease is not something that we're looking forward to, but it's going to happen depending on which investments you choose. And we call these increased values capital gains or capital appreciation. Yippee! Excitement! And we call the decreased value capital losses. Boo is, but relax. If you invest in certain investments, even though they have done very well, they should continue to do well over time, there are going to be times when they fall. And investments come in all shapes, flavors, and sizes. So slide number 5, we see 3 categories of investments. And the category that we're going to concentrate on is securities. That's a very unfortunate term. People just go, huh? We used to call this class investments and securities. And people would go, Students would go, I'm not an administration of justice. No, not that type of security. A security is an investment that represents debt or ownership. And those are fancy terms for, are you lending your money to somebody, debt, or are you buying part of the entity, ownership? So debt is bonds, as we'll see, and ownership is stocks. And we'll discuss these in detail. Relax, just make sure you understand what I'm looking at, what you're looking at right now. Securities also can give you the legal right to acquire or sell an ownership interest. Huh? Later. These types of securities are very speculative, and they're called options and futures, and we'll discuss them in a bit. Another word for securities, which I think is better, is financial investments, and that's what we're going to concentrate on. A second category of investments is property. Real property. Why is it called real as opposed to imaginary? No, it means it's either land or it's attached to the ground. That's why it's called real. I don't know why. I didn't come up with the idea. At personal property, precious metals, automobiles, art, collectibles, Beanie Babies. And they go by various names. Hard assets, tangible assets, commodities. We'll deal with these at the very end of the semester. Our third category is personal investments. Education, training, travel. College is often the best investment a person will ever make. And why is that? Because you're investing in yourself. And they can't take that away from you. They can take everything else away from you. But they can't take that degree or that investment in yourself away from you. All right. As we said, we're going to concentrate on securities. We're going to spend the majority of the semester working on stocks, bonds, mutual funds. I know, I apologize for the name, but you can use financial investments if you want. Slide number 6. Now, on a sheet of paper, you might want to be writing all these down. They're on the handout that I give you for every chapter, but you might want to create a little grid because now we're going to subdivide investments into two other categories, primary and derivative assets. So here's, and when I'm in the face-to-face class, I put these categories on either side of the whiteboard. I start off with the ones we just looked at on the previous slide with the securities and real and hard assets and the like, and then personal investments. And now we put primary versus derivative. Primary assets are either debt, meaning you lend your money, normally in exchange for interest and the promised repayment of that. And examples of these, which we'll deal with later on in detail, bonds, savings accounts, money market accounts, certificates, deposits. And then there's equity, where we are the owner. We're not lending our money. We invest in the business or we invest in the property. And those are stocks or a better term is corporations. You're investing in a corporation. Partnerships, sole proprietorships. You, if you've taken Business 120, learn the difference between corporations, partnerships, sole proprietorships. Real estate is typically an equity position. You are buying the property. And then another way to invest in real estate, which we'll discuss again at the end of the semester, are real estate investment trusts. A very easy way to invest in real estate because you don't have to worry about the tenants or the toilets. Now, we're going to spend most of our time on primary assets. The other category are derivatives. These are securities. They're securities. They're financial instruments that derive their value from an underlying security or asset. Huh? You don't actually invest in the stock or the bond? No. You invest in something that is tied to, that derives its value from the stock and the bond. And these are normally highly speculative. Some examples. There are many, but the two examples you hear often are options and futures. Now, if we go back to our original definition of investments, we said there's something that are going to give us income, or their value will be preserved or increased. derivatives do not fit that definition, in my humble opinion. They do not pay any income, plus their value could disappear overnight. Sure, you're going to have people tell you, oh yeah, you want to get involved in options, you want to get involved in futures, you can double your money in one day. You're right, the next day it could all be gone. So all you have to know about, you don't have to know anything else, folks, is that derivatives derive their value, that makes them easy, right, derive, derivative, from some other asset or security, and that they are dangerous, that they are speculative. And yours truly is going to do his best to keep you from ever getting involved in these things, and we'll discuss them in detail at the end of the semester. And remember that the two major categories, two major examples, if you will, are options and futures, but there are many out there, many others out there. And as it says at the bottom of the slide, some in the industry, myself included, do not classify derivatives as investments. Benjamin Graham certainly would not categorize those investments, and he would do his best if he were still alive. He passed away in 1975. He would do his best to dissuade you, as I am trying to dissuade you from ever getting involved with these things. Yeah. Slide number 7. We will create two new categories underneath those other categories on the whiteboard, if there were a whiteboard in front of you, but you can do it on your piece of paper. Direct versus indirect investments. So a direct investment is one where your name is on the investment. Your name's on the title of the real estate, or your name is on the stock. Well, they don't hand out stock certificates anymore. It's all electronic, but your name is associated with that. And you decide when you want to buy, when you want to sell the bond, the stock, the real estate. Another type of investment are indirect investments, where someone else is actually making the decisions about what to buy or sell. And you have limited control, or more likely no control, over the underlying investment. And examples of these, as we'll see later on, remember, we're just looking at it from just a major categories, are mutual funds, where you invest in the entity called a mutual fund, and then the managers go ahead and decide what to buy and sell. And the same thing is true of real estate investment trusts or limited partnerships. Now, I put a little asterisk here because I don't want you to get confused. You can buy or sell your shares in the mutual fund, the REIT, the limited partnership, anytime, folks. You're not stuck with them. Well, sometimes limited partnerships, it's hard to find a buyer for you. But you do not control what the entity, the mutual fund, the real estate investment trust, the limited partnerships, buys and sells. If you called up your mutual fund and said, hey, I think you ought to buy Apple, they would politely say, oh, thank you very much for your input. And then they'd hang up the phone and hope you never called back again. It's their job. It's an indirect investment. So they're the ones deciding what to buy and what to sell. Slide number 8. We will also categorize our investments by their domesticity, which is a fancy word, where are they based? And there are 3 categories that you need to know and understand, even though they're becoming almost meaningless. There are domestic investments that are based inside the United States, and there are international investments that are based outside the United States. International investments are sometimes called foreign, but you'll hear international more often. Now, you have to be careful of this subtle distinction, because you and I will often equate international with global, but that's not how it works in the financial world. Global means todo el mundo, everybody, including the United States. International, foreign, is outside the United States. So make sure you understand this global versus international distinction. It can get people confused. And if you're making a decision about a mutual fund and it says international and you bought an international mutual fund and it turns out that that doesn't invest in it at all in the United States, and then later on you realize, oh my goodness, I forgot the United States. It used to be that these distinctions were very important, but not anymore. Not anymore. You can find companies that are based here in the United States that do a large percentage, in fact, the majority of their business outside the United States. Have you ever heard of Coca-Cola or McDonald's or Microsoft or Caterpillar? Yeah, you think of them as United States companies, and they are, but Coca-Cola earns 80% of its money outside the United States. Exactly. And there are companies that are based inside the United States that don't do any business in the United States. Figure that one out. A very smart person, I like to quote from very smart people, said, "The world is a very small place these days economically. For example, 65% by value of the parts in the Ford Mustang come from the United States and Canada. 90% of the parts in the Toyota Sienna, which is built in Indiana, come from the U.S. and Canada." Which is the more American car? How can you get more American than a Ford Mustang? Buy a Toyota Sienna. So here, on slide number 9, are many companies, and you've heard of all these companies, right? Maybe a couple of them you haven't. But you have to decide whether they're domestic or foreign. So just look at them, and we'll go through each one in a row. Domestic or foreign? Now, some of them you know, obviously, are domestic and obviously are foreign, right? Right? Which ones? It's not a face-to-face class, so I can't hear you, but think about which ones you think are foreign, which ones you think are domestic. So let's go through the list one by one. Budweiser, Mother Bud. How can you get more American than Budweiser? It's foreign. What? In 2008, it was purchased by a Brazilian, what's the other? above France. Belgian. A Brazilian-Belgian conglomerate. Huh? What? How about Shell Oil? It's Houston, right? No, well, they're very big in Houston, but it's actually Royal Dutch Petroleum is its real name. Some people call it Royal Dutch Shell, and it's a company that is often called a country unto itself. They basically own Nigeria. Ben & Jerry's, right? Based in Vermont. They've got to be a foreign company. Yeah, they were bought by Unilever, which is a multinational entity. And then how about Farmers Insurance, based in what? No, they're foreign. They got bought by Zurich, which is based in Switzerland. And then ARCO, Atlantic Richfield. AMPM is actually owned by British Petroleum. And if you remember 2010, when the BP oil spill came out, they had been, before then, replacing the ARCO. They'd been putting a BP company underneath ARCO, a BP company. And then they all magically disappeared. All the IBP companies all disappeared. And now they're putting them back. And Gerber, that's gotta be a foreign company too. It doesn't make any sense. Carnation and Cup of Soup? Some of you millennials, you live on Cup of Soup. And Fox Network. Now, Fox Network, come on, that's gotta be American, because if you don't agree with Fox News, then you're obviously a subversive communist terrorist sympathizing. It's based in Australia. Seagram's is based in Canada. Bear's German. Vaseline is from England. And Friskies is now owned by a French company. And so is Motel 6. And wait a minute. 7-Eleven! Come on! You see what happened to 7-Eleven? Is that they moved outside the United States. And they created a subsidiary in Japan. And it turns out the Japanese love 7-Elevens. In Japan, 7-Elevens are very awesome, and they're the place to go. And the Japanese 7-Eleven got so big, it turned around and bought the American 7-Eleven. And, of course, Volvo and Saab are obviously the foreign companies. Wait a minute. Come on. You're right. You're right. No, they are foreign. But for decades, almost two decades, Volvo was owned by Ford, and Saab was owned by GM. And then in the debacle of 2008, Ford sold Volvo to a Chinese company, and Saab almost disappeared. Now, it's very sad. Saabs are great cars, folks. I wouldn't buy one, but I think they're incredibly cool. People who drive them love them, and the company almost disappeared. The problem is they very rarely make any money. They don't sell enough of them. And if you take in managerial accounting, you realize that there are fixed costs that, especially if you're a car company, you have to pay for no matter what. And if you don't sell enough of the items that you're making, you never break even. And that's what happened to Saab. And now they're owned by some very, very small company, and it's very sad because they might wind up just getting busted into little pieces, because there are some pieces of Saab that are very important. They have jet parts that they make in jets. So it's a little bit disturbing for some people to see all these brand names that they thought were United States companies, and they either never were or they know are no longer. But, dear students, I, on the other hand, am excited about this. I wouldn't say I'm ecstatic, but I think it's a positive sign. Why? Because the world is becoming more and more intertwined. And when you become more and more intertwined, do you want to go and bomb your neighbors? Because, you know, they're your trading partners, and they're the companies that are doing business here and abroad, and they certainly don't want to bomb you at the same time. Makes sense? Does it make sense? I love Mexico, and I love visiting Mexico, and I really get upset when people say really nasty things about Mexico. Mexico's got a lot of problems. Yes, so does the United States. And what people don't understand is that we need Mexico. They're one of our largest trading partners. Their economy is growing. They love American goods. One year, that was about a year ago, I left for an extended trip, a couple of weeks, where I went from Tijuana to Mazatlan, and then by plane, then the bus to Puerto Vallarta, bus to Guadalajara, bus to Morelia, then to bus to Mexico City, Cuernavaca, back to Mexico City, and then flew back to Tijuana. And from the moment I crossed the border until I returned, every time I saw an American brand or an American company, I wrote it down. And I will, in the face-to-face class, try to get people to tell me how many brands I saw. Now, I didn't go looking for them, folks. I didn't go into a supermarket and then go up and down the aisles. No, no, no. I just, every time I saw one, I marked it down. How many did you think? How many? In the face-to-face class, you get people say 12, 20, 35, 300. And that didn't count all the Disney and Star Wars characters and all the different football and baseball and hockey teams. Hockey, I mean, where is hockey? Basketball's really popular in Mexico. So when people say nasty things about Mexico, they don't realize that they're one of our biggest trading partners and they're buying a lot of our stuff. Yeah. Slide number 10. Let's continue our idea of global investing by looking at the top 18 countries according to per capita income. Now, it's alphabetically, all right? And what I want you to do is try to decide which country had the best annual return over the past 40 years. Who do you think it was? Are you going to think it's the United States? Maybe Japan, right? Japan did really well. I don't know. Germany? I don't know. Who is it? Sweden? What are you talking about? The Netherlands, Denmark, Switzerland? Wait a minute. They have universal health care. They're all socialists, those... How did Sweden do better than the U.S.? Now, the U.S. and the U.K. did okay. You know, Germany did okay. And then there's a bunch... But look at Japan and Italy. Ooh, what's going on in Spain? What's happening there, huh? Well, it's actually very telling. The Italians and the Japanese are having a very serious problem. Their population is shrinking. Yeah, you go to Italy and you're a woman, they'll pay you to have a baby. And it's hard to grow an economy when there are fewer and fewer people. And right now we're having the debate over the immigration, and one of the arguments that the proponents for immigration reform say, look, all these people are here. If we were to integrate them into the economy, it would grow the economy, right? And there's some truth to that. There's downsides that people will also say that, you know, they broke the law to get here. Yes, of course. So it's a very sensitive debate. Why did they come? You know, we can go into NAFTA and all those other problems. But it is true. It will grow our economy somewhat. Now, some of the numbers are you know, it's hard to get a handle on them because you're talking about 12 million people. But the return for the stock markets in the developing world has been around 9%. Now, is 9% good? Something better. Yeah, and we're going to learn about what 9%, 10%, 11%, 6% can do for us in subsequent presentations. Okay, and I want you to remember this slide because we're going to come back to it. Yep. Slide number 11. Now, we're going to create another series of categories called another attribute with three different categories, and that's the time horizon. Is it a short-term investment, intermediate term, or long-term? Now, the ones at the top, up to a year or so, you'll hear people say, intermediate term, 2 to 5 years, long term, 5 or more years. Those are the general guidelines that are used throughout the industry. I take a little bit longer view, I like to think of short term, 1 to 2 years, maybe 3 years, depending on how important it is. Intermediate term, 3 to 5, maybe 6 or even 7. Long term for me is 7, 10, 20, 30 years. But remember, there's room for varying opinions on this. But you should use the ones that the industry claims are most important or most popular. Short term, up to a year or so. Intermediate term, 2 to 5 years. And anything 5 years or longer is considered long term. Slide number 12. Another attribute that we want to create categories for is the liquidity. Huh? Liquidity? What does that mean? Well, it's a silly term, but it means, can you easily and quickly convert your investments into cash? There is a ready market to purchase the investment, and the change of ownership happens quickly. And these are most all securities, stocks, bonds, mutual funds, real estate investment trusts. But some investments are illiquid, which means it may be difficult or it may take time to convert your investment into cash. The market is small, or the change of ownership occurs slowly, or both. And the poster child for this is real estate. Real estate is not a liquid investment. It takes a while for you to sell your real estate. It's just nature of the beast. And then sometimes partnerships can be illiquid. Partnership is like getting married, you know. It can be, and it can be real messy when you try to break it up. And then collectibles are often illiquid. Sure, this website says that this baseball card is worth this much, but when you actually go to try to sell it, no, you're not going to get that much. Slide 13. Our last attribute that we'll take a look at for today is the risk versus return. The spectrum, as it's sometimes referred to. And we're going to spend quite a bit of time on risk versus return, so relax. But risk is the chance that your actual investment returns will differ from the expected returns. Now, you and I, when we talk about risk, we usually talk about the possibility of suffering harm or loss, danger. But not so much in the investment community. When they talk about risk, they're talking about what's the chance that you're not going to get what you expected to get. And we're going to see how risk is measured. It turns out it's very, very difficult to measure. But it's very easy to measure returns. And in general, the higher the expectation of investment returns, the higher the risk level. So in other words, if somebody comes up to you and says, I got a 12% risk-free rate of return, just go, excuse me if I woke you up there, just walk away. Get away from these people, because they're fooling themselves. Often they're trying to fool you. They know it's a turkey. But you're going to see outrageous. If you get involved in investing, you're going to see outrageous claims of returns. And it's all risk-free. Wrong. So I want you to learn these guidelines. These are not the book's guidelines. They're a little bit more liberal. I consider low risk anywhere from 3 to 5%, 2 to 3%, 2 to 5%. Moderate risk, 5 to 8%. and then high risk 8 to 12. In fact, I never tell people they're going to get 12%. I usually say 8, 9, 10%. We'll discuss this later on. Anything greater than 10, 12, especially when you get to 12%, that's speculation. And as we said, is that considered investing? No, I certainly do not consider it investing. You are speculating, which is our euphemism for, right, you know it, gambling. We don't use the word gambling. No, dear students, no, 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 no. Please, have a seat. Have a cup of coffee. Relax. Where's your checkbook? This is speculative, and we have done great. We have taken great pains to make sure that we get paid. I'm sorry, that we get great commission. I mean that you will earn quite a bit of money if it doesn't belly up, which it probably will. I wouldn't touch this porker with a 20-foot pole. So now that we've gone through all these different attributes, and really, were they that difficult? I threw some terms at you, some jargon. You got to go back over and listen to it. Let us now take a look at some examples on slide 14. Let's take a look at some examples and ask ourselves, is it a security? Is it a property? Is it a debt or is it equity? Is it indirect or indirect? Is it domestic, foreign, global? Short-term, intermediate-term, long-term, low, moderate, or high, or liquid or illiquid. So, looking on slide 14, we see that the first type of investment is a Bank of America passbook savings account. Now, passbook savings account? What? Well, that's the real name for a savings account, but very few places still use a little passbook. It looks like a passport. It's all electronic now. So is that a security or is that a property? Well, remember, security is a financial investment. A property is a hard asset or a real asset. So this is a security. It's a short-term savings account. Is it debt or equity? You might think it's equity. But no, it's debt. You're lending your money. You're not buying a piece of Bank of America. You're lending your money to Bank of America, and they're turning around and they promise to give you back the money, and they will, and they pay you interest. Not now. They pay you 0.01%, which means on $100 you get a penny every year. Is it direct or indirect? Well, it's direct. And why? Because when you look at that passbook savings account, your name is on the account. So you directly control what you do with that. Is it domestic or foreign? Bank of America is a domestic company, right? They're based in Charlotte, North Carolina, right? I think it used to be based in San Francisco, but not anymore. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Well, we're going to find that savings accounts for well-educated, intelligent investors should be considered short-term because you are certainly not having any risk involved with this, as we'll see. But you're certainly not getting very much return. If you put money in there for the long term, you're giving up what is called opportunity costs. And we'll discuss this in detail as we continue. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? It is zero risk. Right? It's backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, folks. That's the banking system. And that's why we all held our noses and bailed out the banks, and some of us were very angry, but we wanted to make sure that the banks didn't fall apart. Is it liquid or illiquid? Very liquid. You go into the bank, I want my money, they'll give it to you. They can, believe it or not, they can say come back tomorrow if you ask for cash, but they'll give it to you. Now, how about Nestle's? N-E-S-T-L-E-S, the food company, the largest food company in the world. Is it a security or property? It's a financial investment. It's a stock. Is it debt or equity? It's equity. When you buy Nestle's foods, you're buying a piece of the company. Now, a very tiny little piece via the stock, so that's an equity. Is it direct or indirect? Well, it's direct because you'll buy it through your brokerage account and you'll buy the stock. You could get, we'll see, we have certificates, but nobody uses those anymore. Is it domestic or foreign? Interesting. Where is Nestle's base? It's actually based in Switzerland. The world's largest food company is based in Switzerland. But, like the company Royal Dutch Petroleum Shell Oil, it's a country unto itself. Exactly. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Well, in general, dear students, we like to think of stocks as long term. We want to hold them for 5, 7, 10 years. Warren Buffett likes to hold them for at least that long. But a company like Nestle's, maybe intermediate term because they're so large, they're so well established company. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? Well, in general, we should consider stocks as high risk. But again, a company like Nestle's, we might put them in the moderate category. But for now, realize, and we'll just, again, we'll go over this over again. Stocks are generally pretty high risk. Is it liquid or is it illiquid? Well, it turns out that a company like Nestle's is very liquid. Somebody out there wants to buy your shares. Don't worry, you can sell your shares. Now, what is this next investment? Southwestern Community College Propositions AA and R bonds? What? Well, we're Southwestern Community College. We're a municipality. And we, because we're a municipality, meaning a government agency or entity, we can issue loans. We can borrow money from the public. And we do that via bonds. And we're going to spend a lot of time on bonds. And we went to the voters of the South Bay and said, hey, will you vote for us, allow us to issue these loans? And then we can sell those loans. We can borrow the money. That's how it works. You sell the bonds. And then we are obligated to pay interest to the bondholders. And after 20, 30 years, we have to pay back the principal. That's how we're fixing up the stadium and all the other the roads and all the buildings are being fixed up via these bonds. Yeah, we don't hold a bake sale. And so we needed that money, and we didn't have it, so we borrowed it. And you, the voters of the South Bay, allowed us to do this. Thank you very much. Now, how are they getting paid back? Right, you, the voters, the taxpayers are paying it back. Yeah. Is it a security or is it a property? Well, it's a security. It's a financial investment that represents equity or debt. It represents debt. You're lending your money to Southwestern Community College. We are paying you interest. We're paying you the money back. So it's debt. Is it direct or indirect? It is direct. Your name is on the bond. Well, not anymore, folks. It used to issue a bond, a certificate, but no, it's all electronic now. Your name's on the account which the bond is in. Are we domestic or foreign? Yeah, some people call us Tijuana Tech, but there is an Instituto Tecnológico de Tijuana. Yeah, we're not that. We're based in the United States. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Well, bonds can be intermediate-term, but a lot of people buy them for short-term. There is a way for bonds, as we'll learn when we get to the chapter on bonds, to be short-term. But normally, bonds are intermediate to long-term. Are they low, moderate, or high risk? Well, assuming the property values in Chula Vista don't just fall apart and the tax base falls apart, they're fairly low risk, folks. I mean, there was a time there when people were worried in 2008 and 2009 because lots of people were going through foreclosure, and when they're doing that, they're not paying their property taxes, and when they're not paying their property taxes, Southwestern College isn't getting the money that they need to pay back the bonds, and that's why it was so dangerous in 2008 and 2009. But no, people are paying their property taxes now, so it's low. Liquid or illiquid? For the most part, they're pretty liquid. Somebody will want to buy your bond. So, because it's a good bond. Southwestern College has a good rating. We're not slackers. Now, what about a duplex in Spring Valley. Oh, I don't know, La Mesa or somewhere out there near Santee. Rent one and live in the other. Is it a security or is it it's property. It's hard assets. It's a real estate. Exactly. Debt or equity? It's equity. You own the duplex. Is it direct or indirect? It's direct. Your name is on the title. And it's public information, folks. Anybody can go down to the county admin building and look up who owns that property. Is it domestic? Well, we know it's in San Diego County. It's domestic. Is it short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Well, in general, dear students, Real estate should be considered a long-term investment. There was a time when people were flipping houses. You don't hear about that too much anymore, do you? Yes. They were treating them like short-term investments, and it was like musical chairs. As long as the music was playing and prices were skyrocketing, everybody was happy. And then the music stopped playing, and a lot of people got burned very badly. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? Well, it depends. In the mid-2000s, it certainly was high risk, a very dangerous game. But right now, I consider it low to moderate risk because it's not as though real estate in San Diego County is becoming less desirable. The opposite is true. It's more desirable, isn't it? Especially after the polar vortex and the evil weather of other parts of the country. So I would consider it fairly low to moderate. And there's, you know, real estate is very tricky. If you get one tenant that destroys the house, oh boy, it can make your life miserable. But still, I wouldn't consider it high risk. Is it liquid or illiquid? Real estate is very illiquid, right? It takes you 3, 6, 9 months to sell a property, and oh boy, is it a hoopla to do so. It's not a fun thing to do. But that's the nature of real estate. Now, what's Qualcomm Corporation? It's a stadium, right? No, it's supposed to be all uppercase, but I can't stand it when you type it that way. That's one of the San Diego's largest employers, and they're a very large company. They're all through Silicon Beach area, Sereno Valley, we call it. And is it a security or property? It's a stock, so it's a security. Debt or equity? It's a stock, so it's equity. It's ownership. You own a piece of Qualcomm. And by the way, what does Qualcomm do? People say, well, they make chips. No, they don't even make the chips. They get somebody else to make the chips for them. But if you own a Verizon or a Sprint phone, and now more and more other phones, you have a Qualcomm chip in your phone. And they're also making processors that some of the tablets are using. So they're doing pretty well, folks. It's a very difficult business, so we wish them well. Is it domestic or foreign? I'm going to say direct or indirect? Yes, it's direct. We said that already. Domestic or foreign? Well, here's another example of the world turned upside down. It's domestic. It's based here in San Diego. It's one of our largest employers, but they make more money outside the United States. Figure that one out. Exactly. Short-term, intermediate-term, or long-term? Yes, stocks are long-term investments, dear students. You should consider an investment in Qualcomm a long-term investment. And I know you're going to say, but what about those people who buy and sell all day? Forget about them. They're not the kind of investor that you want to be. Plus, if that's the kind of investor you want to be, a speculator, you've come to the wrong place because I can't help you. Is it low, moderate, or high risk? It's fairly high risk, folks. They're in a cutthroat business, and next, you know, 6 months, the whole world changes, and if they don't stay on top of it, somebody else could eat their lunch, so to speak. Is it liquid or illiquid? Very liquid, right. Somebody will buy your 100 shares of Qualcomm from you. Your broker will take care of it. In fact, you might not even talk to a broker. You just might go online and click, 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 and boom, they're sold. Now, our last example is a loan to Uncle Harry. Yeah, every family has a Uncle Harry, a Tio Lucas, whatever. Is it a security or property? Well, if you're lending money to somebody, that's a security. And is it debt or equity? It's debt. You're lending your money to Uncle Harry. You own the loan. He's going to pay you interest and the money back. Yeah. Direct or indirect? Direct, you're stuck with it. You own it. Domestic or foreign? Well, so far he's still in the States until you get a postcard from someplace where... short-term, intermediate-term, long-term, or how about infinite? Yeah, exactly. Is it low, moderate, or high? Oh, boy, right. Liquid or illiquid? Nobody's going to touch your debt. You're not going to be able to sell your debt to nobody. Because everybody knows, I already know about Uncle Harry. I hope you enjoyed that. So, what have we done? We have taken a very... long view, far away. We've looked at investments from a very, very high up. We're flying over the investment landscape at 70,000 feet in a spy plane, right? And we've learned many of the attributes about investments. And all you have to understand is what is in these slides, folks. That is all you have to understand. And what I suggest is you go back through it again, because repetition is the key to learning. Because when we come back in our next presentation, we're going to now come down to around 35,000 feet. And we will flesh out the major categories of investments. We've been looking at attributes and taking a look at the different attributes of investments. And we've mentioned them, the various examples. And now we're going to look at them a little closer. And in whatever analogy you like, I like the flying down closer, looking at it closer. Maybe you like the analogy of an onion where you peel back the layers. Don't be concerned about the details. Make sure you understand what we discuss in these presentations and realize that it's a process that we're going to spend the entire semester on. So in this section, in this chapter, make sure you understand what's in the presentations. Go back over it. I like to write things down again. Other people don't. They make flashcards, however you study. But that's one thing that I'm going to reiterate over and over. You need to dedicate half an hour, please, at the least. An hour is better. Every day. Because this material is not that conceptually hard, but it's tedious, and there's a lot of it. And again, as we said, a lot of problems come from people's preconceptions of what investments really are and all the jargon that they've been thrown at. So we welcome you again. We are so happy and honored that you are here. Please go over this again. Make sure you understand these attributes. And then we'll see you in the next presentation where we do our overview of investment alternatives, overview of asset classes. Thank you for taking Business 123, Introduction to Investment. See you in our next presentation.